Namaste Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, Chapter entitled The Son of Drona Punished, Text Number 49. Suta uvacha, dharmyam nyayam sakarunam, nivyalikam samam mahat, raja dama suto ragya, prachananda dvacho dvija. Sudovacha. Suta Goswami said, Dharmyam, in accordance with the principles of religion. Nyayam, justice. Sakarunam, full of mercy. Nirvyalikam, without duplicity in Dharma. Samam, equity. Mahat, glorious. Raja, the king. Dharma Sutta, son. Ragya, by the queen. Prachanandat, supported. Vacha, statements. Dvija, O Brahmanas. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Suta Goswami said, O Brahmanas, King Yudhishthira fully supported the statements of the Queen, which were in accordance with the principles of religion and were justified, glorious, full of mercy and equity, and without duplicity. Translation responsibly. Suta Goswami said, O Brahmanas, King Yudhishthira fully supported the statements of the Queen, which were in accordance with the principles of religion, and were justified, glorious, full of mercy and equity, and without duplicity. Purport. Maharaj Yudhishthira, who was the son of Dharmaraj or Yamaraj, fully supported the words of Queen Draupadi in asking Arjuna to release Ashwatthama. One should not tolerate the humiliation of a member of a great family. Arjuna and his family were indebted to the family of Dronacharya because of Arjuna's learning the military science from him. If ingratitude was shown to such a benevolent family, it would not be at all justified from the moral standpoint. The wife of Dronacharya, who was the half body of the great soul, must be treated with compassion, and she should not be put into grief because of her son's death. That is compassion. Such statements by Draupadi are without duplicity because actions should be taken with full knowledge. The feeling of equality was there because Draupadi spoke out of her personal experience. A barren woman could understand the grief of a mother. Draupadi was herself a mother, and therefore her calculation of the depth of Kripi's grief was quite to the point. And it was glorious because she wanted to show proper respect to a great family man. Omagyan Timadandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshunulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaya Dadati Swabhadantikam. Pancha kalpaturubhyascha kripa sindhu bhyevacha petitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Rama, Hare Hare. So as Prabhupada points out in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, in the purport to the second chapter of the first canto, in the 18th verse, then Prabhupada points out that there are two types of Bhagavats, Nityam and Bhagavata Sevaya, two types of Bhagavats, which means two types of glorious personalities. One is the book, Bhagavatam, the other is the personality of the Bhagavatam. So the book is full of the divine personalities, or the pure devotees of Krishna. So as we've discussed previously, this is how we understand what is actual pure devotion, or the highest level of pure character. The devotees are full of all good qualities. Because Rupa Goswami describes in his description of pure devotional service, there are six features of Uttama Bhakti, or pure devotional service. Shubhada, Kleshagni, Sudulabha, Moksha Lokudakrit, Sandrananda, Visheshatma, and Sri Krishna, Kashini. So the first two qualities of pure devotion is, one is Kleshagni, which means all distress will be destroyed. And the second quality is Shubhada. Shubhada means development of all good qualities or auspicious qualities. So a devotee has all auspicious qualities. And we'll see in the pages of the Bhagavatam that devotees have all auspicious qualities. You'll see that throughout the pages, when you see the examples of each devotee, you'll see perfect behavior being exemplified. So here, we'll see that Yudhishthira and Draupadi are showing ideal behavior. Perfect behavior. This is the pinnacle of human life. That is why the Bhagavatam is called the Paramahamsa Samhita. It is the topmost scripture. It is for those personalities who are the most exalted personalities. And it is full of the descriptions of the most exalted personalities. So you see, what is the quality of Draupadi and Yudhishthira? That their children have been killed. Murdered. Right? There's nothing more psychologically damaging in the material world. Nothing is more psychologically damaging or disturbing than having your children murdered. Particularly in the way they were murdered. They were Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas were only fight... previously, you see, if you study the Mahabharata, and if you study Dhanura Veda, that part of the Vedas which describes military warfare and psychology, then you'll see that you'll only fight with equals, and you'll only fight in a place where innocence will not be disturbed. That's why when the battle took place, everyone went to Kurukshetra. Right? The women, the children, they were left home protected, right? And all the warriors went to Kurukshetra, and then they fought it out in that particular place. Even up until the beginning of World War I, you see in France, if you go back a few centuries to the Napoleonic Wars, even at that time, it was considered that war should be fought between equals. So you'll see that the armies, they would fight, and there's descriptions when Napoleon was fighting in the Battle of Waterloo, when the actual battle was taking place, there were spectators on the side of the battle. People were sitting there watching the battle taking place, you know, drinking cups of tea. Yeah, everyone was sitting there and watching. It's like a whole war going on. You know, cannons were being shot and horses, cavalry were riding through. People were being beheaded. And people were just sitting there drinking cups of tea, waiting for the outcome. Who will win? Will France win? Will England win? They're looking for the decision of the battle. So previously, this was a cultured civilization. And up until World War One, generally wars were still fought like that. But then in World War One, we saw that they began to bomb innocents. And then in World War Two, things got totally out of hand. Hitler sent his planes to London to bomb the English, to bomb Britain. And they're bombing the, what do you call them? The communication towers. They had these towers all around the coast of England. So Hitler was strategically bombing all the communication towers. He's basically just shutting them down so that they couldn't defend themselves, so then he could take over. And he was actually winning the war. But then what happened one night, they came in, and because the fog gets so thick in London, in England, the fog was so thick, the planes all went in, they couldn't see a thing. So then they had to fly in, they couldn't find anything. So on the way out, they dropped the bomb so they'd have enough fuel to go back to Germany. So they dropped all the bombs, but they were over London at the time. So they just dropped it all on London, right? Because up until then, they were just bombing the communication towers on the coast. They just dropped them all on London. So then Winston Churchill, he woke up the next morning and London was just decimated by bombs. So then he thought, okay, well, if that's the way it's going to be, then we'll start bombing Berlin. So then they sent their planes the next night to Berlin, just bomb the hell out of Berlin. And then Adolf Hitler, because he was the kind of person he was, a megalomaniac, he was just psychologically very, he's like the pinnacle of egotism. You know, he was a complete asura, practically. So then when Berlin had been bombed, then he said, okay, well, we're just going to bomb London from now on. Now it's just London. So they just bombed London night after night after night. So then innocent people, I mean, not that anyone is innocent from the karmic standpoint, but innocent people were just being bombed. And this is what war has turned into. Whereas in a civilized culture, the way that military or armies fight is in an equal way. So we see that what happened to Draupadi's children was that they were murdered in the middle of the night. They were Kshatriyas, and they were sleeping. And Ashwatthama, who is a Brahmana, has walked into the camp, and because Brahmanas are allowed to move freely because they're trusted within society, they've let him into the camp. He's gone while they're sleeping, and with the heel of his boot, then he has kicked them in the head while they are sleeping, you know, with like some sort of spear, like a steel spike on the end of his boot. He's kicked them in the head and he's killed them in the middle of the night while they're sleeping. Right, complete act of cowardice. And then he's taken their heads to Duryodhana. Duryodhana is lying in the... this is after Kurukshetra has finished, a few days after. He's lying... He actually went to the bottom of a lake and then he came out and he had a fight with Bhimasen, which went for many days. And finally Bhima crushed his thigh on Krishna's advice. So he was laying there, dying. So Ashwatthama wanted Duryodhana to feel satisfied before he left this world that he'd accomplished what he wanted to accomplish. Because Duryodhana's entire meditation throughout his life was just to kill the Pandavas. Right? This is a demon. And that's why the Bhagavatam teaches us the difference between divine and demoniac natures. Right? A devotee thinks one way and a materialist thinks another way. How does a materialist think? Right? A materialist is completely egocentric. He just thinks of himself. So Ashwatthama, being completely immaterial consciousness, takes the heads of the five boys, the five sons of Arjuna and Draupadi, takes them to Duryodhana, right? And Duryodhana's laying there about to die, being defeated by Bhimasen. And then he feels the heads of the five children, right? And he says, I've brought you the heads of the five Pandavas. Now you can die peacefully. They are dead. So then he feels the five heads. And he said, these are not the Pandavas. This is not the Pandavas. Like that. And then even he is disgusted with Ashwatthama. And Duryodhana was also an asura. He was an incredibly selfish and demoniac personality. And he said to Ashwatthama, what have you done? Yeah, what sort of a person are you? You know, I mean, this is the quality of human being they were. So now we see completely the opposite. We see what we are not meant to be. I mean, this is an extreme example. Obviously, none of us would do this. But we see what we are not meant to be in the Bhagavatam. But now we see what we are meant to be. Right? So now, Yudhishthira and Arjuna, actually, Arjuna brings Ashwatthama. He goes and captures Ashwatthama, grabs him, brings him to Draupadi, right, and puts him in front of Draupadi and says, "Now tell me what to do with him." Right? And Draupadi and Yudhishthira are there. Bhima is there. So Bhima gives his opinion. Right? And Bhima says, "Kill him." Right? Which is what I would do. You know, if someone had murdered one of my children, I don't think I could feel compassionate towards the person. I don't think it's within me to feel that kind of compassion. And I don't think most people would have that kind of compassion at that time. You know, when you're the murderer of your children has come, I don't think we can think, it's natural not to think compassionately towards this person. So Bhima says, kill him. And then Yudhishthira and Draupadi, they say, no, don't kill him. Right? So this is what we're learning from the Bhagavatam. Right? What is true greatness? Or what is true perfect character? Or what it means to be a Paramahamsa, a pure devotee? Because within Vedic culture, and within a cultured civilization, five personalities are always offered respect. Who are the five personalities that we always protect and respect?
Brahmanas.
Cows. Women.
Children.
And elderly people. Right? These five are always offered respect and always protected under all circumstances. Right? We always protect cows. We always protect children. We always protect elderly people. We always protect women. And we always protect brahmanas. Right? That is a civilized culture. And you see, when a civilization is protecting or respecting these five groups of persons, then what takes place? Right? The civilization flourishes. Right? And what happens when they neglect these five? Right? The civilization deteriorates. And we see what's happening in the modern world. Right? Civilization is deteriorating. Right? We're seeing that there are the fibre of society is deteriorating, right? Because these five are being neglected. Right? Cows are being neglected all over the world. At the moment, the Australian government is planning to build the biggest abattoir so far in this country in outback South Australia. Biggest one they can build, because we don't have we can't keep up with the live beef trade. We can't keep up. Right? There's a demand for Australian beef all over the world, and we can't keep up. So what's the answer? Build a bigger abattoir. Right? Make it bigger. So now that's what they're planning. That's like being debated at the moment. It's going to happen, basically, because there's so much pressure from that industry, and that industry is one of the biggest makers of money for Australia. Something like I heard a figure the other day. I think it's 50% of Australia's land is used for beef. 50% of Australia. If you add up the entire of Australia, the land mass, 50% is just for beef. But we're one of the biggest beef producers in the world. Right? So our society, you can understand our society, this country is going to have problems. We're kind of riding the peak of the wave at this point in time. Just like America has been very opulent and very affluent for many centuries, right? And Prabhupada pointed out the reason why America became so affluent is because the founders of America, if you read on the dollar bill, the American dollar bill, it says, "In God we trust." Right? So the Prabhupada points out that the founders of America, they were religious men. Right? So because they were religious men, then their country flourished. But now because it's becoming very adharmic or irreligious, you can see America's beginning to decline. Everyone knows it's on a decline. You know, the empire has been built and now it will crumble. Prabhupada points this out. Look at all the empires previously. The Roman Empire, right? Or the Aztec Empire, right? Or the Mongolian Empire. They all came and then they subside. So America is about to do that. And Australia, we're kind of like on our peak at this point in time, like we're on our highest kind of level. Everything's perfect here. We are the lucky country. Melbourne is the most livable city in the world. But it's on its decline because there's innocent entities within our country are being murdered. So therefore, everything will crumble in due course of time. Whether it happens quickly or it happens slowly, but it's going to happen. There's no doubt. Because it is because of our dharma. So cows are being neglected. Right? Children are being neglected. Women are being neglected. Elderly people are being neglected. Prabhupada even points out that in Papua New Guinea, sometimes they have a Sunday feast. Have you read that, where Prabhupada says that? Yeah. Sometimes in Papua New Guinea, they get the old people in the village and they roll them off the roof and then they eat them. This is right out in the back, back of Papua New Guinea. Still there is cannibals. There are cannibal tribes. So when the old people become too old, then they think, well, let's have a feast. So they roll them off the roof. Right? And then when they die, then they have their feast. Even, what's his name, that devotee who preaches in Indonesia? Gora Mandala Bumi Prabhu, who preaches in Indonesia. He told us that even 10 years ago, he went to Papua New Guinea. I think if we're looking at the map, the left side is called Papua, right? Papua, I think it's part of Indonesia, and the other side is New Guinea. It's a different country. I think there's two separate countries. So he said he went to Papua, like the right side, which is still very jungle-like. And he said when they did preaching programs, he said the villagers came to the preaching programs and the men were carrying spears. It was only 10 years ago in Papua, in that part of the world. People are still carrying spears. So the elderly people, sometimes they don't get protected in civilizations. And especially, we see in this day and age, brahmanas are not respected. And this is where civilization becomes, as Prabhupada points out, headless. We don't have a class of brahmanas at this point in time. There's no head on the body. If you look at the modern world, you look at Australia at this point in time, there's no head. Just like sometimes I turn on the radio to find out what's going out there, what's going on out there on the other side. Because I live in a forest. So like on the other side of the forest, sometimes I've got no idea what's even going on outside that forest, like on the other side. Sometimes I turn on the radio to find out what's on the other side in the crazy part of the world. And you just hear them constantly arguing. As soon as you turn the radio on, they're just arguing. If you hear the politicians, most of it's just politics on the news. And if you turn it on, the politicians are just arguing. Why? Because there's no head. There's no one to listen to. There's no one who can give them spiritual guidance or advice. And therefore, what do they do? They just simply get onto the materialistic platform. So Prabhupada pointed out that ISKCON is meant to create a society of brahmanas. So what is ISKCON meant to do? ISKCON, Prabhupada said, we don't want to run the government. Prabhupada said, we want to advise the government. In other words, we don't have to run things, but we just want everyone to listen to us. Because we are the leaders of society. Right? We are the ones who are going to save the earth, or at least save Australia, or at least Victoria, or Melbourne, or Albert. What's that?
Nanagun, where the creeks are,
they're
the good land.
Nanagun, yeah, we're going to save Nanagun. Yeah, we're going to save Nanagun, and hopefully Albert Park in between. Because we're meant to save the planet, the Prabhupada said. Prabhupada actually said that our movement, ISKCON, will be recorded in history as saving humanity in its darkest hour. Right. So we're meant to guide humanity. So you can understand the size of the service that we have to do, that we're meant to do. We're meant to save humanity. And sometimes most of the time, I'm quite concerned about that. Because we can't even get the microphone ready on time for the Guru Puja. How are we going to save humanity? We're supposed to save, this part of the world. We can't even virtually get up in the morning. We get disturbed if, we don't have the right prasadam for breakfast. If we don't get enough milk sweets, we begin to defunction. We become psychologically unstable. So how are we going to save the planet? But this is actually what Prabhupada has given to us as a service. One time Prabhupada was in Mayapur watching a slideshow. This is in the very early days, in the 70s. He was watching a slideshow and a picture of Bhaktivinoda Thakur came up on the slideshow. And one of the devotees, one of Prabhupada's disciples, they said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, you've done even more than Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he preached in India, but you have preached all over the world. You have surpassed even Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Srila Prabhupada said, actually, if Bhaktivinoda Thakur desired, he could have saved the entire universe. But he is very merciful and he left us some service to do. Right? So this is our position. We're meant to save humanity. We're meant to guide humanity. And that's why within our temples we have Srimad Bhagavatam class. Right? Devotees are meant to come to the class. Srila Prabhupada in Mumbai in the early 70s, he was there, and Prabhupada was giving class in the morning, Bhagavatam class, and many of the devotees were not in the class. So then Prabhupada said, where are all the devotees? And the devotee, they said to Prabhupada, they're cleaning your room, Prabhupada. You know, maybe six devotees or whatever it was were up there cleaning Prabhupada's room. And Srila Prabhupada said, we can pay people to do that. We can't pay people to come to the Bhagavatam class. Right? Devotees are meant to be in the Bhagavatam. This is the whole purpose of this temple. Right? And Prabhupada actually, he said one time, he said, if there is no preaching in the temple, right, if there's no kirtan and there's no class, right, the Bhagavatam is not being recited and learnt by the devotees. Prabhupada said, if it's just deity worship, he said, in due course of time, he said, you will just smoke, right, and you will become hippies once again. Right? Smoking, he meant marijuana. He said, you'll go back to your old ways. He said, if you just worship the deity and there's no preaching in the temple, he said, in due course of time, you'll just smoke and you'll just go back to your old ways. So the whole point of the temple is that we are meant to have Bhagavad Dharma. Or in other words, we're meant to be hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. So devotees are meant to come to the Bhagavatam class. And in this temple, I was discussing with Atul Krishna Prabhu the other day, that this temple is actually very special, even in ISKCON. Because if you travel around ISKCON at this point in time, at this point in history, how many temples will you find that have courses on Shastra? Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhav, Bhakti Vedanta, Bhakti Sava. Where do you find in ISKCON, even at this point in time? Even in Australia, I think this is the only temple that has an opportunity to study the Shastra, to learn the Shastra. This is the point. Now, we're meant to study the Shastra. Why? So that we can become brahminically qualified. Then we can guide society. We can guide humanity. And it will make us fixed. Nashta prayeshva badreshu. Abhadrani means inauspicious things in the heart. Whatever is in your heart which is impure. Does anyone have impurities in their heart? You have impurities? Are they in there? Right, we have impurities in the heart. How do you get rid of them? Nicham Bhagavata Sevaya. You have to hear the Bhagavatam. This is the process for cleansing the heart. So what is the first requirement which is necessary when you hear the Bhagavatam? The first requirement is that you stay awake. Number one. This is first. Even Prabhupada was giving lectures sometimes. Prabhupada was giving a lecture, I think it was in Mumbai actually, and to his disciples. One of the disciples headbutted the ground. In Prabhupada's class, he just goes and hit the marble with his head. And Prabhupada said, go and take rest. Go and take rest. If you want to sleep, don't sleep here in the temple. Rupa Goswami says it's aparad if you sleep inside here. It's aparad. Don't sleep here. We have beds. Or if you're brahmachari, we have floors. Or at least when we were brahmacharis, we had floors. Now you guys have bunks and mobile phones and computers. And we did the austerity. We were the real brahmacharis. We were austere. We slept on the floor. I still sleep on the floor. Even now. Like that. This is we had our brahmachari training. Brahmachari actually means tapasya. It means austerity. Right? When you're grihastha, you can enjoy. Then you can get your fluffy bed and pillows. But when you're a brahmachari, you have to practice some tapasya, some austerity. It has to be there. Because why do you do tapasya? You do tapasya to develop sense control and mind control. And it makes the mind strong. That's the problem with modern civilization. People's minds are weak and their senses are weak. Brahmanas need to be strong. They need to have strong minds and strong senses. Sense control, mind control. Then you can... even I'll tell a story, because my good friend is sitting here. So he took me to Tasmania. This is 1989. I'd been a devotee for 3 months. you probably remember this one. This is the same time when Pete got Bringa on the wall. So I'm a new devotee. We go travelling down to Tasmania, right? We're collecting to maintain the temple at the time. There's four of us, brahmacharis. So we're living in a caravan, and we get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and we go and take our bath, right? So we go and take a bath, and we're having cold showers, right? In May in Tasmania. Right? That was us. Actually, when I got back to Melbourne, I got into the shower and I turned on the cold tap and I got under it and I thought, oh, that's warm. So I turned off the tap and then I turned on and I thought, oh no, it is the cold tap. I thought I'd turn the warm tap on. That's how cold it was. So we're doing that. So then I got up to go and take bath, and it was 4 o'clock in the morning in the caravan park, and there was the male toilet and the female toilet. So the male toilet was, the lights were out. So it's 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm a practical person. So I thought, I'll go into the women's stall and take a bath. That's practical. So then I was the last one up. Those three had already gone and taken a bath and come back. So then I came back and they were all chanting their japa. So then I came back and I walked in and Atul says to me, he's the brahmachari leader, he said, didn't even look at me, he said, which shower did you go into? And I said, I went into the women's. Like that, and he goes, like, what sort of sense control? I don't think he spoke to me for about 6 hours after that. What sort of sense control is this? What sort of mind control is this? You deviated from the path of brahmacharya. You took bath in a woman's toilet at 4 o'clock in the morning in a caravan park in Tasmania. Your brahmacharya is corrupt. And it was actually a result of that moment that I became a grihastha. I lost all my brahmacharya potency and I became a grihastha 8 years later. Just because of that. It's a fact. No, it's a joke. It's not right. But the point is that brahmanas, they have to be sense controlled. They have to have control of the mind, they have to have control of the senses. Because if one does not have control of the mind, one control of the senses, one cannot develop potency. So therefore it is necessary for the brahmanas to develop this kind of sense control. So Prabhupada said we need to develop a class of brahmanas who can guide society. And if we don't have control of our own senses and our own minds, we can't give guidance to anyone else. Because they have no control of the senses or minds. If you look at modern society, there is no sense control, there is no mind control. Right? And we have to be a different class of people who can actually give them guidance. So the most important element is that we must hear the Bhagavatam. Right? And the most important element of hearing the Bhagavatam is, first of all, you must stay awake. Right? When you're hearing the Bhagavatam. Right? You must listen to the Bhagavatam. If you listen to the Bhagavatam, if you hear it attentively, then what will take place? The impurities in the heart will be destroyed. If you're hearing it properly. You see, devotees who read the Bhagavatam regularly, who study the Bhagavatam, who hear the Bhagavatam regularly, right, who go to classes regularly, what happens is that their consciousness becomes purified. Because the process is called, as we've described previously, it's called swajaya. Swajaya means self-study. Right? We have to study ourselves. That's what we're doing right now. We're looking at Draupadi. We're looking at Yudhishthira. What are they like? What should I be like? I should be like them. Yeah, I read this. I don't think I could be like them. I don't think I could do what Yudhishthira and Draupadi have done. But I should try to get to as close as I can to their level. Right? We should feel inspired by their example, not dejected. Sometimes devotees, they asked a question recently after we spoke on this point. Devotees said, I feel dejected. I read about Yudhishthira, I read about Draupadi, I feel like I'm useless. I can't keep going. No, we should not feel dejected. We should feel inspired. This is what we should become like. This is the emblem of purity. We should aspire for this. So if you listen like that, if you study yourself, if you are introspective while hearing and reading Prabhupada's books, you can cleanse the impure things from the heart. Just like I read this and then I think, okay, I have to become more like this. So now I go into a state of meditation, which I do regularly. You know, I regularly study Prabhupada's books. I go into a quiet place, because study must be done in a very quiet location. You can do it with others or by yourself, but it must be done. And you have to go very deep. And then I think, okay, when I go into these situations later in the week, I'll try to be more, you could say, more like a devotee. I will follow in the footsteps of the Mahajans. Mahajan Yena, Gatasapa. I'll follow in their footsteps. I'll try to act in this world like they act. I'll try to respond like they respond. And then during the week, right, then you plan to be more pure in your consciousness. And then sometimes we fall down. We make mistakes. Right? Prabhupada says failure is the pillar of success. Right? So sometimes you make mistakes or you don't come up to these standards or you disappoint yourself the way you react. But then what do? Right? Then you think, okay, now I'll try to improve next week. I'll try to get better. Right? So then gradually you improve. And you should see gradual improvement in your character. Prabhupada says that you should look in your consciousness and you should see gradual improvement taking place. Now, if you have a look at the qualities which are mentioned in this verse, first of all it says, King Yudhishthira fully supported the statements of the queen, which were in accordance with the principles of religion and were justified, glorious, full of mercy and equity and without duplicity. Full of mercy. Devotees are meant to be merciful or compassionate. Now, if you look at the 26 qualities of the devotee, which Mahaprabhu mentions to Sanatana Goswami in Sanatana Shiksha, Kripalu, Akrita Droha, Sachasara Sama. Now, what is the principal quality? When we say, what is the most important quality of a devotee, what do we generally say?
Humility.
Compassion. Okay. I think generally devotees will say humility. Right? That is meant to be the emblem of a devotee. He's meant to be humble. Akrita Droha. If you literally look at Akrita Droha, it means non-defiant. Right? And you can test your consciousness. Someone says something to you, and what do you immediately do? Right? Like, don't tell me what to do. You can see in the body language. When they study communication, 7% is what we actually say. And then what's the pie chart? Do you remember the figures? Like that?
I think 30% words and 60%
body language. So 7% is what we actually say, right? 30% is the tone in which we say it, right? And then about 60% is our body language. That's how we communicate when we communicate with someone. So you see when someone says something to us and immediately you see the body language in life. Or so, you know, devotees, they go like... Like that. It's not really what it's about. It's an attempt to be what it's about. Just like sometimes devotees came to Prabhupada and they would offer obeisances. One devotee said to Prabhupada, when I come before you, I don't feel like offering obeisances. I don't feel like bowing my head. I don't feel like offering obeisances. Prabhupada said, do it anyway, and the feeling will come. So if you do it anyway, right, if you at least do the right thing, then eventually the feeling will come. But we have to learn to actually feel like this, non-defiant or humble. Right? This is the quality of a Vaishnava. Now, interesting, because when Mahaprabhu lists the 26 qualities, even before he says humility, the first thing he says is Kripalu. Kripalu means compassion. Right? Devotees are compassionate. Our whole movement is based on one thing, compassion to the fallen conditioned souls. Right? So sometimes we're very good. Actually, they've done studies on us. People have studied us from an academic point of view. So people in the academic world have studied us, and they have actually written in their papers, ISKCON has the highest philosophy. This is from an academic external point of view. They're not practitioners, but they say we have the highest philosophy, we have the best philosophy. If you study us religiously or philosophically, our philosophy is the most sound. But they've also written in the same paper, although they have the best philosophy, they treat each other the worst. Not the worst, not means not the worst, but if they look at other groups, like religious groups, they say that they don't treat each other as well as other groups. Philosophically, they're better, but in terms of the way they treat each other, not always the best. So we don't have to be just compassionate to all the non-devotees. Right? It's not about just being compassionate to, you know, we want to save all the conditioned souls, and devotees are good at doing that. But it's how we treat each other as well. Right? Real compassion. Looking after each other. Right? Even at one point in time, there's that famous statement where Prabhupada said there was 300 or 400 members in the society. Prabhupada said, we have enough devotees now. We had 300 or 400 worldwide. Prabhupada said, we have enough now. Now it's time to thicken the milk. Train the devotees. Look after each other. And I remember I listened to a lecture many years ago. In 1994, then they had the North American GBCN Temple President meetings in North America, in Dallas. And they recorded the meetings. And Tamal Krishnamurti was asked to give the keynote speech. So he gave the speech to set the tone for the meetings. And he said that in the very early days, in the late 60s, Prabhupada would write letters frequently to the devotees, personally. As time got by, then Prabhupada had secretaries, and Prabhupada would dictate, and then they would write the letters and send them out. But in the beginning of the movement, because there was only like 70, 80 devotees in the movement, sometimes Prabhupada would just write letters to devotees. Not without even a letter being written to him. He'd just write a letter and say, you know, how are you and what is going on? I haven't heard from you, like that. And Tamal Krishnamurti said, if you study those early letters of Prabhupada, continuously he uses one phrase. He says, our movement will go on by love and trust. Right? These two points, love and trust. And if that is in ISKCON, as Prabhupada said, nothing can stop us externally. The only thing that can stop ISKCON is internal problems, right? And you see that in our society, whenever there's problems, it's inside, right? Like Hungary was being attacked externally, you know, we overcome those things. Russia is being attacked externally, we'll overcome those things. Externally, they can't stop us. Prabhupada has already said that. The movement cannot be stopped externally. If problems will come, that's okay, but it cannot be stopped. But internally, we cause so many problems. And why is that? Because there is not genuine love and trust. That must come between the devotees. That is compassion. And if you have that love and trust for each other, right, then automatically we'll take over the world. Automatically. Srila Prabhupada even said, very early on in the movement, he said, Krishna can give you the entire USA, he was saying to the devotees in America, he said, Krishna can give you the entire USA in 18 days. But he said, what will you do with it? So there's no problem with us taking over the world. If we can make our movement perfect internally, right? Externally is not a problem. Taking over the world is not that much of a difficulty. That's the easy part. Right? That's not easy, but that's the easy part. Right? The actual challenge, or the most important challenge, is to what is to make our society pure within. Or in other words, it has to be based on genuine love and trust. So this is compassion. So you see here, you see the perfect example of compassion and mercy is that Draupadi has the murderer of her children come and she says, no, release him. Right? He is a brahmana. He is the son of my husband's guru. Yeah, he's the son of my husband's guru. Protect him. Right? This is an incredible level of compassion. Right? And then, ultimately, then the final part of the verse says, the principles of religion were justified, glorious, full of mercy, equity, and without duplicity. Without duplicity. If you look in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, in the first verses, you'll see the Bhagavatam is for those who are near Matsarana. Near Matsara. Matsara means envy. Matsara. And what is this whole world based upon? Envy. One thing. Why did we leave Krishna? Right? One thing, envy, that's all. That's the only reason we've come away from Krishna, because we are envious. And Prabhupada actually says in the end of the third chapter in the first canto in his purport, Prabhupada said devotees need to study their consciousness. Right, and we need to see what sort of envy is in our consciousness. It happens all the time. You just have a conversation with a devotee during the day and then see, feel how your consciousness shifts. Right? See the subtle shades of envy which enter into your consciousness. You know, we sometimes are very pretentious. Sometimes we interact with devotees all day long. Right? And we act very humble, and externally everything's fine, but internally there's so much turmoil. So much envy is acting in the heart. Actually, there is an English saying which says that pride often borrows the cloak of humility. Now, we often borrow the cloak of humility, and we almost get it down pat sometimes. Like, we're so humble, and everyone thinks we're so humble, and we're so sweet. But internally, there's so much pride there. So much envy there. So these things have to be removed. And if you're sincere in bhakti, if you sincerely try to serve Krishna year after year after year, and you want to get rid of it, but you can't overcome it yourself, Krishna will remove it for you. I remember many times in my life, you know, I've tried to overcome envy. I've had a problem with a particular devotee. And in my heart, I just cannot overcome that problem. And then somehow Krishna makes an arrangement to remove it, right? He humiliates me, or he does something to remove it. So gradually, if you're sincere and you're trying to serve Krishna, but you're having trouble giving up your anattas, but you say to Krishna, please help me, then Krishna will remove these things. And eventually he'll remove them fully. He'll bring you to complete humility, complete surrender. How does he do that? And takes away your material body. At the time of death, right? Krishna just makes you completely humble. Right? And if you're in the right state of consciousness, then you become completely humble. But if you're still proud, then okay, then you take another birth. But if you're in the right state of consciousness, Krishna takes everything away, and then you just get into the right state of consciousness. I'm just an insignificant servant of Krishna. So if we study the Bhagavatam, we will develop these good qualities, and these good qualities will come in contact with them, and gradually they'll purify our consciousness, and we'll enter into higher levels of devotional service in due course of time. So we'll stop here, and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we have discussed.
Would you like to give some example of equity?
This whole pastime is showing equity, because she's equal, you know, in happiness and distress. Like, you know, things are good, sometimes things are good in your life, but how do you act towards other people? Sometimes things are bad in your life, but how do you act towards other people? So no matter what goes on, you still show saintly character, or proper Vaishnav achar, or proper Vaishnav behavior. Jabhataka Swami gives the example. Just like when you grind the sandalwood, right, the aroma becomes sweeter. So Jabhataka Swami has taught us that when life becomes intense, our character should become sweeter. Quite often when things get intense, we become very unpleasant to those around us. But if someone's pure, then even when things are intense, they'll become very...
In spite of grief of 5 children being murdered,
she forgives him. She forgives him. I don't think I can get to this point in my lifetime. I don't think I could get, psychologically, I don't think I could actually get there where I wouldn't want to kill the person. I don't think I could get there. I don't know. She's like, well, I just, you know, I read the Bhagavad Gita, I'm just like, you know, we should just develop the desire to serve them, Yudhishthira and Draupadi, and everyone in the Bhagavad Gita, because, you know, they are what they are, and if we serve them, then we might go to where they go, like that. But I know for myself, like, I don't think I could do it. Bhima was like that. Bhima just wanted to kill him. You know, so maybe I should take shelter of Bhima. You know, maybe he's my saviour, maybe. Hanuman and Vayu, and they just do it. Like that, so. You had a point?
You were talking about how the members of the international society in comparison to other societies and movements? What are the reasons?
What are the reasons? It's a general statement. It doesn't mean it's absolutely true. I don't feel in my life it's like that. I feel I have many loving devotees around me like that. So I don't feel ISKCON's all bad. It's a generalization, but I also do see it sometimes in my life and also in our movement like that, that we don't treat each other well. I think it's because devotees, we tend to get too caught up, you could even say in ourselves, in our spiritual advancement. So sometimes we're so focused on just making spiritual advancement ourselves, right? And we're so caught up in, you know, I have to chant my rounds, I have to read the books, you know, I have to have my sadhana like that, and every, you know, just, and we're just so concerned about making it, and then we tend to like just not deal properly with those around us. So sometimes it becomes like that. We just become selfish in spiritual life. So there has to be a balance, because you have to be selfish in spiritual life, because if you don't spend time on your own sadhana, you can't remain strong. You know, so you have to make time for that so you can be strong, but you also have to make time to deal with the devotees properly. And sometimes, especially see young devotees and new devotees, they get very caught up in their, just in their life, and you know. And then the result is sometimes we commit aparadhas, offences. I remember when I was a new bhakta in the ashram, and you know, all the leelas I used to have with all the other new bhaktas. Yeah, you know, like we'd just be all the time, just constantly criticizing each other, and you know, just, you know, things we just say to each other, and you know, picking each other up and like that. And it's just because we were all like we all thought we were pure devotees. You know, I put on my tilak perfectly. You know, and I put on my dhoti perfectly. You know, I'm at Mangalati on time every time, and you know, you're 1 minute late every time, and like that. And we just start becoming, you know, like that, and then we develop like a critical mentality like that. So as you become an older devotee, one thing that you learn when you become an older devotee, it's actually not that easy. When you're a new devotee, you think you're just going to be a pure devotee in 7 years. When I joined, I thought, yeah, I'll probably be a pure devotee probably in 2 years, you know, because the process is so powerful and I'm so fired up and fixed that it's all going to happen like that. But after you've been a devotee for a number of years, you just realize it takes a lot of time. You know, so then you become more realistic, and then you become more, how do you say it, lenient on others. You understand their difficulties. Just like I was in Vrindavan at the MVT restaurant, I was finishing prasad, and I was lining up at the counter to pay for my meal, and there was one guru who had been a guru in our movement, and he left his guru ship probably about 10 years ago, I can't remember, one of our Prabhupada disciples. He was a guru and he left his guru. He had problems, so he left, but he was there. And he was paying for his meal, and he was very, you know, humble, and you know, people know who he is. He was a big person, yes, God. And, you know, one of his god sisters was next to him, and she was saying to him, you know, Prabhu, you're so glorious. You're so glorious. You've gone through so much difficulty, and still you're here in Vrindavan, you're following everything, you're following Prabhupada, you're so glorious. And he was just half ignoring her. He was just paying for his meal. He's just like, yes, Mataji, like, you know. Okay, like that. But I can see, you know, how. So when we've been around, we tend to be more lenient on other devotees. Because really, it's not that easy to be a devotee. You know, some devotees have been a devotee for 1 year, 2 years, 10 years, 20 years. That's nothing. You know, we have to be devotees for 60 years. You know, like that. It goes for a long, long time. So we have to become. Or you do become, as time goes by, you just become more lenient on others, because it's not that easy to stay a devotee over time, because Kali Yuga is so powerful, Maya is so powerful. Prabhupada said, if I have one criticism of my disciples, they do not fear Maya enough. And as you become a devotee for a longer period of time, you realise, you know, she's very powerful, she can take us at any time. I know myself, I can just be taken at any time by Maya, you know, because I'm just a little jiva, and she can take me any time she wants. Does that answer your question? Okay. Any other points, questions, or comments?
We have to build more love and trust in the community.
How to build more love and trust in the community? By loving everyone and trusting everyone. Learn to love each other. Like, there's many people in this room who I love. Many. I have love for them. It's not even, I don't even like many of the devotees here. I love the many of the devotees here. So you have to develop love for the devotees. How do you develop love for them? You serve them. How do you serve them? Right? Then what does Rupa Goswami say? He says there are six loving exchanges. Priti Lakshana. Priti means love. Right? You give devotee a gift, you receive a gift, but do it with love. You know, don't just mechanically give a gift. You know, here's a gift. Here's a new dhoti. No, do it with love. Right? And give prasad, receive prasad. Do you like to do that one? Do you like that loving exchange? I love that loving exchange. I love it. Sometimes the devotees, they bring me sweets, so I made some sweets, you know, here's some sweets. And I say to them, you'll get very good marks in the course. You know, that's love. You know, they do it out of love, like that. And we receive it out of love, so we do like that. But the most important out of the six is inquiring confidentially, right, and revealing our mind in confidence. That is really how devotees show their love. So if you want to love the devotees or show your love for the devotees, you go to the devotees and say, how are you doing? Are you okay? You know, is there anything you need? Is there anything I can do for you? Like that. That's love. You're showing your love. You actually care about them. And devotee says, I'm going through a difficult time, so what can I do? How can I help you? You know, what is it you need at this point in time? That is love. Right? It's real. It has to become real. Like that. And then trust. Love and trust. Right? Trust will break love. Right? If trust is broken, it destroys everything. Because spiritual life is based on one thing. Right? Shraddha. Adol Shraddha. Rupa Goswami says, Shraddha means faith. Trust. Right? We have trust like that. If that trust is broken, right, it's very difficult. You see, devotees, that's what makes them struggle more than anything else. Their trust gets broken like that. So we have to become trustworthy. We have to develop trust. I mean, don't let each other down. Don't say something if you can't do it. That's why, you know, if you take initiation, don't take initiation unless you can follow the vows. You know, 16 rounds, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat-eating. You know, don't say it if you can't do it. Okay, maybe you'll struggle with it, that's okay, but if your desire, you have to express your shraddha or your faith through following things. So it means, trust means that we do not break down each other's faith or trust. In other words, we become reliable as devotees. And that's how our movement becomes strong, because we know we can rely on each other. Just like I have devotees, so I know if I have some friends that I know if I've got some problems, I just ring them. It doesn't matter where they are in the world. I say I need some help, they'll be there for me. So we need to develop strong relationships. Does that answer your question? Okay. Any other question or comment? Srila Prabhupada ki.